From the moment we're born and lock eyes with our parents, we are inspiring others. By showing up as a vessel of service, we not only help others, we help ourselves. Welcome to SOS, Stories of Service, hosted by Teresa Carpenter. Hear from ordinary people from all walks of life who have transformed their communities by performing extraordinary work.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the 134th episode of Stories of Service, Ordinary People Who Do Extraordinary Work. And I am the host of Stories of Service, Teresa Carpenter. And today I'm so excited. I have another amazing guest that I've known since the beginning of my podcast journey and who I consulted many times, even before I was starting this project. Rich Cardona, how are you doing today?
I'm very well. I'm thrilled that you're 134 episodes in. And I remember, I just want to tell everyone, I tried to talk you out of this because yeah, I'm just like, well, hey, I was like, it just depends. And this is the best case scenario where you're like, no, I want to do this. I can be consistent. And here we are like 3 years later. It's ridiculous. So I'm super happy to be here and I will give the audience everything I possibly can.
Awesome. Awesome. And I remember that one of the things you warned me about was just how massive of an undertaking this could be without help. And yeah, I will tell you that there have been hacks and tips and tricks, and now I've got Parade Deck helping me and some others. So it is definitely this evolving process where the more you do it and you deepen into it, then you do have to start bringing on people to help. But I'm going to go ahead and read your bio, and then I'm just going to start asking you some questions about where you were born and raised and sort of your story on how you went from being, like it says here, from being a helicopter pilot in the Marine Corps to now doing all the things that you're doing today. Okay. I love your work. As I said, it combines authenticity, craftsmanship, accountability, and you have just such a love of storytelling. And it's, I like I said, every time I would read one of your posts, I'd be like, oh my God, he must be just talking to me right now. Even though I know you weren't, but there were so many things that just like applied to like what I was going through at the moment, which makes you, in my mind, stand out as a sought-after thought leader. Oh, and today, you're welcome. Join us today. We're going to talk about how you transitioned from the military as a helicopter pilot to now building a company in the digital space. As I said, you found your passion for media after transitioning, earning your MDA. Then you went on to your leadership role at Amazon and consulting with Cloud Silver from Viner Media. And that's when you launched your own company, Rich Cardona Media, with a focus on helping executives become more visible. And by doing that, you also created, and that's when I got involved and started listening to your work, with the Leadership Locker, which was a top 50 ranked podcast in which influencers and industry leaders shared their insights aimed at helping transitioning service members and veteran entrepreneurs. Then after that, you started your own podcast, I believe with Heather, what's Heather's last
Parody.
Name? Parody. Yes. Yeah. And I've had her on my show. She's amazing. NFT for Newbies, which went viral and gained 1 million downloads in less than 8 months. Yeah. And now you create long-term content strategies for high-profile content creating CEOs to advance their brands and business visibility. Among many brand services, Rich Cardona Media offers video podcasting, video production, content repurposing, and we'll even talk about how you do this for your church even, and you do this in charity work. And I think it's just amazing that you, like I said, you're a craftsman, you're a storyteller, and you're deep. I mean, there's a lot of places that this goes. So your approach to business and content creation is influenced by your military background with an emphasis on simplicity, urgency, and rigor, and serve leading with those core values of accountability, be better, and clarity in communications, the ABCs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And welcome.
Thank you. That was fantastic. I'm so glad you read that. I'll tell you why, because we're in the middle of a rebrand and I'm so over Rich Cardona Media. It was just kind of like what I did at the beginning. And now I feel a little bit more mature in the business space. So I'm just so glad. It's a total side note that you read that, because I'm like, I'm so ready for something new. And we have a couple names that we're floating with. But yeah, thank you so much for that. And yeah, I'm thrilled. Let's do this.
No, I'm so thrilled to have you on here. And like I said, there weren't that many people like you 3 years ago on social media that was talking about podcasting and going into such depth with it. So I first just want to start off with where were you born and raised, and what inspired you to have a life in the service?
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Morristown, New Jersey, and very quickly into high school, I was doing a lot of bad things. And as a junior and with a sister who was a senior, she was set up to kind of go to community college. Like, we did not have the financial resources really to just kind of do what we thought, you know, should happen, I guess, mm-hmm. when you evolve from high school. And I'm a first generation American, and so is my sister. So I, as a junior who was doing all kinds of bad things, realized this is not going to work, because what I did know was that a lot of people who did go to community college, which I have nothing against, but where mm-hmm. I was, they just went and they did it to work, and then they would just hang out in town and drink and just do all the same things. So I kind of saw the writing was on the wall. I was like, that's going to be me. I need to figure something out. And I'll never forget this. I went to the military recruiting office downtown, and I think I went in to go see the Navy, and I did go to see the Navy, and they weren't there. And the Marine guy was like, let's chat. He was like, let's chat. And I was, next thing I know, I mean, I'm like basically signing papers. I was 16 at the time, but I was sold very quickly. And I realized this was my opportunity as a junior to kind of join the delayed entry program, just know that I have that lingering, that there's no way out per se. And I would be able to garner, you know, the discipline, the character, doing something mm-hmm. out of the ordinary, be the first person in the military in my family, and get enough college, get enough money for a college education through the GI Bill. And, you know, and then there I went after graduation, which what was supposed to be 4 years turned into 17 years and a full career, which was fantastic. But that's how it started. It was very much my first self-aware moment as a person. And that was when I was 16 years old and just realized this is going nowhere.
I was going to ask you, were you kind of having like, I mean, you sound like a lot of my background. Were you having sort of a partying background where you were just kind of hanging out with your friends and just kind of goofing off? Or were you a real serious student that just didn't have any direction? Or what was it?
I was not a serious student in high school. My social life took complete priority, and that meant doing all the things I think looking back now that I'm actually talking about this, I think I just wanted to fit in, obviously. So I was drinking, I was smoking, yep. I was smoking the other stuff too. I mean, I was doing all the things, and I somehow was still able to get pretty much like B's and A's, and I never really failed anything. But I was one of those people that that other older people or adults would say, oh, you have so much potential, but know, that was me. That was right. me. And it was great, because then I had the opportunity to do something myself by joining the service, and everything changed quick, fast, and in a hurry, as you know, because I was enlisted just like you were. So I started out enlisted. Yeah.
And you started off enlisted, and then you got picked up for like what, the Marine commissioning program, or one of the commissioning yep. paths. And then why aviation?
I didn't actually choose aviation as much as I was encouraged to just try to take what's called the ASTB, an aviation standardized test battery, I believe it was. Yep. And I did okay. And next thing I know, it's like you can have a flight contract. And what was appealing about a flight contract for me was that the basic school, which is essentially, you know, for people who don't know, it's like boot camp for officers. And at the end of it, you kind of get assigned whatever your occupational specialty is going to be. I didn't like that I was going to have to perform or get outperformed to where I ended up with something I didn't want. I mean, just the thought of me getting something random that I might not have desired, I was over that. So with a flight contract, you are in the pipeline to go to flight school, pre-flight indoctrination, all these different things. So I was just like, we used to say it, F it, I got my flight contract. Like we just treated TBS very differently than a lot of other people, because a lot of things depended on it. A lot of their performance and where they were going to go depended on how they did. And I did not necessarily have to worry about that. So
you didn't have that same stress.
No. So
you knew that your path was already decided. That's interesting. I didn't know that that's part of that.
So I always tell people that I never was like sitting in my bed at 6 years old planes. Thinking like, oh, I'm going to fly one day. Like, trust me, like I never, ever. I mean, when I was going through flight training and just the things that were happening, I just could not believe that that was my life. And at the same time, it was very much a rude awakening because it was a completely different mental skill set than I had ever been accustomed to. So it was certainly stressful as well.
Right, right. Because now you're in such a creative field. And so, and not to say that being a pilot doesn't involve creativity, because I've now come to the conclusion that every job has some level of creativity. 100%. But I do believe that there is people who have an engineering mindset, and then there's people that gravitate more towards the creative arts.
Yes.
And especially now that I'm in the military, and I think I've more now am realizing that I'm one of those more creative types.
Yes.
I'm very at peace with that, but it took me a long time to understand that. And so I'm curious, from your perspective, did you grow up being more of a creative, or did you grow up being more of that engineering kind of spatial acuity mindset? What kind of a person would you have described yourself?
If I were to describe the type of person I grew up, it would be neither of those things. I would say I was just a totally aloof person. It was almost like I was kind of just sleepwalking through life unconsciously. And I didn't believe I was creative. I didn't believe I was good at anything. I was just so interested in just social capital. And mm-hmm. As far as the engineering, I mean, I think we all have moments of deep focus, especially as, you know, I'm not clinically diagnosed with ADHD or anything like that. I feel like everyone at this point suffers from that in some way, shape, or form. The severity can vary, but I'm not able to focus very well. But when I do, it's deep and it can be granular and I could get lost. And it wasn't until kind of like after the military that I realized on the creative side, that's what it was. When I was in, I would say sometimes there was moments of just deep analytical projects that I enjoyed. But it's really interesting that you asked that question, because I look back and I just like, what the heck was I doing? Like, I didn't have a North Star, Teresa, like at all. I was just going with whatever was pushing me rather than me pushing what I wanted.
Right. And you were checking the blocks that they wanted you to check to get to that next point.
Yes.
But I mean, you stuck around for 17 years. So obviously you were moving through the system and doing things. May not have been. Did you know at that 15-year mark? Because that's when you're kind of like, oh, I'm going to stick it out till 20. So what happened around the 15 mark?
So at 15 years, one of my buddies who had been in, one of my very best friends, Mike Deal, he was a year ahead of me. He had come in a year ahead of me, and he told me about the TERRA program. I was like, what are you talking about? And it's the Temporary Early Retirement Authority. It is something mm-hmm. that is offered once in a while in the Marine Corps, and essentially you can retire early. And if you stay, you get 50% of your base pay. So they just reduce it by a certain percentage for each year that you retire early. So you mm-hmm. have to be between 15 and 20 years. When I saw him do that, I was thrilled, because I was like, I want to get out. Because at the stage I was in my career, I had a seizure. I had a seizure after our combat deployment, and they were just like, we never know if this is going to happen again, but we can't take the risk that it does, or else you might be in an aircraft when it does. And I was like, okay. So that being said, I was a legal officer. I was working at, you know, higher headquarters essentially, and I was doing admin work, which I didn't mind. And while I was doing that, I was getting my MBA, my executive MBA. But the writing was on the wall, Teresa. Like, I was going to get some really shitty billet somewhere that was probably undesirable. I was engaged at the time, and I raised my hand. I was in California also. I mean, I was in San Diego. So I was like, I'm going to make this call and I am going to submit for this. So the decision, I would have gone 20 had that not been an option. But as soon as it was available, I was, I could not have signed quick enough. You have no idea.
It really sounds to me like you've just always have been one of those people that wanted to take control of your life before it took control of you. Yes. And I can relate to that a lot. It's like, but sometimes that can also be an addiction where you're constantly trying to get ahead of something that you might not need to get ahead of if you just like let it happen. But it's really hard to know where to balance that, that piece of control, allow things to happen and be more.
I'll add something on that, if you don't mind though. Sure. And I never, ever, ever want to paint the picture that the Marine Corps did not shape my life in such a dramatically positive way. And at the same time, being part of something that is far, far bigger than you could even imagine, and just the relationship you have, the meaning of serving your country, like all that matters deeply. But it also means, in a way, you quote unquote belong to them. Yes. And once you're out, and I had a very visceral experience working at Amazon, and we could get into that if we need to, but I did not look up to anyone I was working with at all. Like, they were nothing, and I sound so awful saying that, but it was just very different than the people I had served with, who I believe are just exceptional human beings at the highest level in terms of talent, in terms of wisdom, in terms of just fortitude, like all the different things. So at that point, and when I eventually quit, it was my turn, you know, and it was exactly what you're saying, that I had the opportunity to take control. And from that moment, I would consider myself unemployable, because I just want to be in total control. I just do.
I understand that feeling.
And I mean, it is incredibly difficult to be the person who's now writing the mission, you know, and doing the execution and all those different things, but it was worth it. So what you're saying is absolutely true. And it was very accurate in terms of trying to escape, so to speak, from being under the control and taking control for yourself.
Right. And I think everybody who wants to branch out and make something and create struggles with that, because it's this feeling like you want to be a part of this wonderful team. And like you said, all these great people and this mission that may, you know, you may even disagree sometimes with the bigger strategic mission, but sure, within that organization and within your team, and I can say this right now at NATO, I definitely feel this way. Creating the content that we do and doing the things we do. But at the same time, there is that feeling that yes, you do belong to an entity that quite frankly will do just fine without you. You walk away tomorrow and the beat goes on.
Exactly. It you will be backfilled quick, fast, and in a hurry. Whether it's someone who's experienced or inexperienced, it doesn't matter. Like, you are an afterthought. And mm-hmm. I hate to say that, but I mean, it's something.
It's how the organization has to function in order to survive and to continue to keep on going. And you're right. You could build up the most amazing program, and then 2 years later, you can turn it over to somebody else, and it can all go to shit.
Totally.
Because that's just that's the nature of the beast, and how it needs to continue to repurpose and to revitalize. So after you left, I do want to ask a little bit of questions about that, because I want to know about the culture shock of transition. Yeah. So you went from 17 years, you're in San Diego, you're engaged, and now you're a retiree. How did that go? Or how would you describe it?
You're literally like just putting me back in this place of overwhelm. And I never want to scare anyone, but I always want to be very truthful about the experience. I thought to myself, 17 years in the Marine Corps, I flew a $24 million helicopter. I have combat experience. I've led in many capacities. I had an MBA from a private institution, very well recognized in California and USC. You know, just no legal issues, clean cut. I felt like I went to the Deloitte Corps program. You know, I was doing all the right things. I was starting the network on LinkedIn. And Teresa, it was such a rude awakening, because all I mean, I got all the resume help in the world. There's a program called CTAP in Oceanside, California, Career Transition Assistance Program. I mean, I did everything by the book that I was supposed to do to position myself. And when I realized nothing was really happening, I mean, that was part of the reason I was getting an MBA, because I just needed to make sure that I was going to be marketable, because I wasn't entirely sure. And I just thought that would help. I mean, nothing was going on. I was getting offers for the shittiest sales jobs you can imagine, and for a awful base salary with not a great commission. And I was like, what is happening here? And look, like, maybe I did a bunch of things wrong in hindsight, but I still instinctively don't feel like that was the case. So as I eventually took a job for a media company, ironically, that was veteran focused, and it was okay, but it was a racket. Meaning I just wasn't sure about the manner in which they were operating, the truth behind it and whatever it was. But I was doing the whole cold calls. I was doing the emails. I was doing everything so methodically. And I just, here's the funniest part of that whole job. I was so excited to travel, because I was like, oh, I feel like, you know, like I really made it. I'm in a suit and I'm traveling. The second time I traveled for that particular job, I was sweating on the plane in my nice shirt, and I was super uncomfortable with my dress socks, and I wore shirt stays, even though, like, you know, you don't need to do that, but I wanted to look sharp, you know, and I wanted my shirt to never be untucked. And I was like, this effing sucks. I was like, this is not fun at all. And now right. I had to go pitch, you know, this university on why they should advertise in this magazine. And it was just not what I expected at all. I thought, you know, all the informational interviews, the, hey, can I pick your brain, to like people who were in the Marine Corps and had been out for a few years. I mean, I was doing all the things, and I just quickly realized nothing was necessarily happening that I wanted. And against my own intuition and my research, I went to Amazon. Now, I had applied for a job there. I went through the interviews extremely quickly. They made me an offer, and I went to Glassdoor that night just to kind of like really be like, am I sure about this? And it was just morbid. I mean, it was super awful. And some of the military folks that I talked to, I mean, I could just tell you this, nobody that I talked to who was a veteran, who was at Amazon, was enthusiastic about it at all. Like, there was no one who's like, dude, we'd love to have you. Like, this would be great. You're going to kill it. It was just like, yeah, well, this is, my life is like this, and peak is really crazy. So I said no. But after I wasn't finding anything, a few months later, I called back, and they're just like, yeah. And they took me.
And you and needed then that a paycheck. Was, I mean, you had a family, you needed to just support yourself at that point, right? And yes. And that was the decision that you had to make, even though your heart wasn't there. It was like, okay, well, game time. I've got to do something to make money.
You're exactly right. I wanted to be a provider. I wanted to make sure that, I mean, I was proud when I signed, because then we had this beautiful home in Texas and I was able to support. But I just want to make this one point, is that if I could go back and do anything, I would have probably saved substantially more and given myself the capacity to kind of explore, or just, you know, rent wherever I was and just not necessarily have something until I found something I actually wanted, and I would have relentlessly pursued it. What I believe happens in today's military is, as when people are transitioning, is they feel a sense of relief once they've been offered something, and they will take it, and they're unhappy very quickly. And I just don't want that for veterans. Like, I just don't, like, mm-hmm. Just save your money and do the thing that you want, even if it's entry level, because you will show up charismatically, you will outperform everyone there. Right. But if you just take whatever is offered to you that you don't necessarily want, that sense of relief will quickly dissipate into, what the F am I doing?
Yeah, because you're not living out your purpose, and no. And you're not living in your authentic self and doing the things that make you happy and being around people that appreciate what you bring to the table and they value who you are, then you're not going to be happy at that position. And that's, to me, what that sounded like. Besides the fact that the people weren't happy there, it wasn't a position that it sounds like was the right fit for you. So how long were you there, and then where did you go next?
I was there for 2 years before I quit, and I was at Amazon for 2 years before I quit, and my financial advisor was like, you are insane. You know, just stick out the 4 years so your stocks could vest. I was like, I can't. Like, I was destroying my life. My family life was awful. I was very out of character, doing things that I shouldn't have been doing, you know, it was crazy, but I was a very high performer. My team was a very high performing team. I mean, it was fantastic in terms of, you know, productivity, but everything as a public success, private failure type deal. So after that, I quit and I moved with my wife and my daughter and my dog out of our home in Texas, Austin, Texas, a beautiful home. Then we moved into my wife's parents' basement. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm a retired Marine. I have an MBA. I'm former Amazon. And I was like, what are people going to think? And that was quickly upended by the relief I felt from not being part of something I didn't want to be part of and outside of someone's control. And I'm telling you this because I didn't have a freaking plan whatsoever. I was just like, I need to decompress for a couple months. So that just led to me tapping into my creative side, which you've discovered before getting out, which is amazing. But I didn't realize that it existed that much until I left Amazon. So yeah, I mean, it was so seemingly risky. But I look back and I'm just blessed that my in-laws were able to open their home like that. And that 2 months turned into 6 months, unfortunately. But, you know, everything that needed to happen happened. And I cannot emphasize enough how blessed I am that my wife was incredibly supportive of that decision and how I never felt an ounce of judgment for what was transpiring. And it's what needed to happen.
Yeah, had you done video before, storytelling, communicating? No. Like, that's where I'm like, I mean, at least I'm a PAO and like there's people look at it like, okay, she's a PAO that has a podcast. Okay, we get it. Like there's some sort of relation. That's what I mean. Like you were like doing project management, MBA, helicopter pilot. Where did content creation, you know, factor into this?
That's so funny. And if you are watching on LinkedIn, mm-hmm. LinkedIn is the reason I got into content creation, because as a lot of people thought back then, LinkedIn was only for job seekers and job, you know, job and recruiting and that kind of thing. So my content creation journey came out of the need or desire for a security blanket in case I ever needed to rejoin the kind of normal workforce. So I started making content on military transition because it was very much a documenting versus creating type deal. I was living through it. I started making all that content and I started back when LinkedIn was very loose, I was adding 1,000 connections a month and I was getting traction. I mean, much better than I'm doing now. It's so funny, but you know, and I started Teresa, I don't know. I just started creating.
You just like start standing with a phone and you'd have
I would get a tripod and go to a park in Blackstone, Virginia and record some random ass content about transitioning or leaders eat last and this. And I was just doing
motivational whatever. Leadership kind of thing.
Yeah. And just
and this is before
just,
you had the podcast or anything.
Yeah, totally. I took a course on editing. I hated editing. I started going to video conferences and that's what happened. And I'll tell you what happened. I mean, This is the lesson in just doing versus just like thinking. If you just take the action, I ran into someone who was a retired Navy E9 or E8. I cannot remember specifically, but he saw me at a conference. I asked a question at a conference and I had mentioned in my question that I was a retired Marine, and this gentleman overheard it and he stopped me and he goes, just shook my hand and we started talking. And then a month later, he's like, I want what you're doing on LinkedIn for me. And that's how I started creating for other people as well. So it morphed very quickly. I had no idea what the hell I was doing. I assure you that, but I just started making talking head content. I was like, I think I can do this. And that's what I did.
So the first, like your first clients, were you doing this remotely? Were you going over to their house and like setting up a tripod?
No, it was a combination of virtual where I would coach them on what I believed was important for their personal brand because they were business owners. So I would coach, it'd be just something like this where, you know, I would essentially interview them. And I had started podcasting lightly around that time. So it was very, congruent with that. But mm-hmm. yeah, if they were at a conference, I'd say, hey, why don't I just come to the conference with you and I could get, you know, footage of you talking to people. I was just trying anything. And it just, Teresa, it just evolved from there. So it was incredible, but that's how it started. I mean,
that's
I think,
crazy.
Yeah, it was, yes.
Because you had no experience in this. Like usually Zero. When I talk to people, and you started this in your 30s, you must have been, because you, if they're like mid to late 30s, you'd never content created. You'd never, I mean, it just goes to show you. And because that's the thing that I'm so impressed about your work, Rich, is that unlike a lot of influencers that are just okay on Instagram and just taking selfies and stuff, you do the work, you do the editing, you do the long form videos. I mean, the things that you put together are of the quality of what I would consider like a professional videographer. And I it just amazes me that you didn't have any experience in this and you just self-taught yourself. Because I get people all the time that come into my shop that say, oh, I need this school, I need to do this, I need this training. And I do think that all that stuff's helpful. But yes, I also think there's a lot to be said for just picking up a camera and playing around with it and going on YouTube and watching videos on how they work. And
well, here's what I will tell you that you already have. I don't think I don't think people take time to dwell on the barriers when what you want to do is front and center. And it's not video that I wanted to do. It's not content that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to reach other people. And then eventually as a podcaster, I wanted to talk to people. You like to have conversations. So when I started podcasting, I mean, I was interviewing all kinds of people that I cannot even tell you how diverse a group of people this was. I was just anything I could do to have these conversations. And at some point, you know, if I'm going to have these conversations, why am I not recording it? Okay, then why am I not videotaping it? Okay, then how am I going to get that onto the interwebs, right? Mm-hmm. And I just had to figure something out. So if at the heart of it all is not the technical aspect of it, it was literally what you already have right now, 134 episodes in, which is just a desire to share stories, have conversations, and then put those out that so hopefully other people could benefit. And I don't want to say and pat ourselves on the back and be like, that's selfless, but that's just how we're built. Like, we like to amplify other people's voices because if we find it interesting, we know that other people might as well.
Exactly.
That's it. That's it.
Oh yeah. I mean, every guest I have on, of course I'm getting something out of it. I don't just do this for my guests. I do this because there is an ulterior motive, I suppose is what you want to call it, because I learned something and yes, I'm gaining this information at the same time that I hope that my listeners or watchers are gaining the same thing. And so totally, to me, it's win-win. How was it for you? Because you of course have had all these huge, like Gary Vander, I can't pronounce his last name.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've had these huge people. How did you pitch them? Like, how did you even like think to would you just cold reach out to them like on their socials?
Yes. So I cannot believe you asked me that. I mean, I guess I should have anticipated it, but I was thinking about it this morning when I was working out. I was like, I really need to make content about just how completely optimistically naive I was that I would land these people on my podcast. And the reason I thought that was because after I've run into a couple of these entrepreneurs or was very fortunate to interview them, I will just tell you they were just totally human. The minute we started recording, I mean, maybe they were on a little bit, but before and after they were amazing. But during the recording, I had zero fear, zero issues with confidence, zero nerves, zero stumbling over my questions. It was just exciting. It was exciting for me. So after a couple tastes of it, I'm like, I'm just going to continue to reach out. And I will just tell everyone, anyone who's watching or listening, the secret was I just tried to have a compelling headline because that's our subject line, because you got to get them to click on something. Like, you have that's it. It's just like a YouTube thumbnail. It's like, you know, that's why the click through rate is so important. It's like people need to click before they could read the title, before they could watch the video. And I would always say marine aviator turned media company owner and something along that would, or marine retired marine aviator interviews Arianna Huffington. You know, I would send anyone anything. And I definitely got some bites in the past, but now it's a little bit more challenging for sure because podcasting and video podcasting are huge. But yeah, I was very fearless because I did believe my audience at the time for the Leadership Locker would benefit tremendously from their expertise. And that's how I positioned it. Not, hey, I want this. It's like, hey, I think this audience would benefit from you. And that usually worked pretty well. So that's advice I would give to anyone who's trying to land some guests.
Yeah, I always try to combine the guests that I have on with so many types of people too. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just have the big names. And yes. In fact, I actually intentionally don't. And I want people that grew up with me, let's say, or that can share some sort of a story that from our past that I find that I think I find interesting. And I hope that my audience will find interesting. So I think that that's another piece to this is you're creating content and you're telling stories is that you want to make sure that you're not just a what I would call a clout chaser because people can see through that too. And
agree.
And it's not authentic. It's
I'll really tell you how you can tell, by the way, like they ask the same questions these people have been asked. They've done no actual research to determine, I don't want to be redundant. How am I going to ask different questions given this opportunity?
Right.
That interview that you don't think you're going to get, if you get it 2 years later, you will be more qualified than the last person who had them on their show. Like, trust me. Like, trust me. So yeah, it's not about the clout and they will be able to see the sincerity. And I just want to share one quick story. There's one gentleman I went, his name's Andy Frisella. He owns this company called First Form. He's a founder of 75 Hard. He has a ridiculous podcast. My wife and I were able to go out there and have an interview with him. And after the interview was over, it went so well. And I also went with a gift. I brought a cool military gift, of course, but we were able to stay for probably 2 more hours. We got this ridiculous tour. He sent us home with what I would probably say 2 years worth of athletic gear for both of us. Like, it was insane. But it was also because I was able to reference things he talked about in episode 7 of his podcast, which was 5 years before that, because I had been listening when I was working out and taking ridiculous notes. So when someone, I don't want to say is when you flatter them, but when someone, it's going to resonate with someone if they realize how much effort you put into taking that interview seriously. And that is that's the game changer right there. That's when they know it's not about clout.
Right. I agree. And one of the things, like I say, I always loved about you and your content, especially your LinkedIn videos that you used to do, you would always say things about accountability. A lot of your videos were really just about doing the work and accountability. And sometimes I would read something that you'd write and I'd just be like, oh, he kind of triggered me. And then I realized, like, okay, he's triggering me because I'm probably not doing the thing that he's saying that you should be doing. Yeah. So, and I think that's really good because a lot of times people don't hear that. And it's hard because it's like, you don't want to badger people or you don't want to insult your audience. But at the same time, if you want to do this and you want to get good at it, you have to do the work.
Yes. I mean, no one's ever respected, not respected, but no one's ever desired to go the same path as someone who had it easy. So it's like, why don't we just talk about how shitty it can be? Like, I love sharing failures. I love it because, I mean, it's not necessarily a loss as much as it is a lesson. So yeah, I think like that's just, I feel like that's why I shared some of the how much of a culture shock it was transitioning, because I'd rather be honest about it instead of being like, oh, this was an amazing experience and I got this amazing job and I went right up the ladder. And no, that's not how it went. That's not what reality is for many of us. So yeah. I think accountability and authenticity are very much fundamental to how I want to create.
Right. And people can see through it when you're not. And that's how I've always structured my content around, is that if I'm not going to be 100% myself and I'm not going to create things that are true to who I am, then why am I even doing it? I'm wasting my time. I'm wasting the audience's time with the product, because it's not going to be the best it can possibly be.
Sure.
So when you decided to start making these videos, you had the podcast, you did Leadership Locker for quite a while. And then I think you transitioned from Leadership Locker then to NFT for Newbies.
Yes.
Right. How did that come about, and why? Why NFTs?
So the Leadership Locker, I got to 200 episodes. I was on such a roll with it. And it was an amazing experience. But NFTs for Newbies was growing at this just rocket ship kind of level. And the reason I went after that was not because I necessarily was interested in NFTs and Web3 and that kind of stuff, but I was just fascinated by it and also confused by it. And my good friend Heather and I were just like, let's just publicly learn. So if you are an aspiring podcaster or content creator, there is very, very deep value in learning on the go for other people. So all the questions that we had, all the things that were confusing about this space that has had such a boom that certain year, I mean, we were reaching hundreds of thousands of people who had the same questions. And I mean, it was just an incredible experience. And eventually, I mean, we parted ways with it before that whole wave lost steam anyway, but we had creative differences. Like Heather is a true creator. I'm she obsessive is. About business. Yep. So it's just like, it just made sense and that was totally fine. And I see what she's doing now and I'm like so thrilled. And I told her the other day, I was like, I'm just like really proud of like how she's just risen as a creator.
Her reels are just on point.
Phenomenal.
I mean, everything you see, like, and she, I love how she'll take like a thought leader or she'll take a famous person or, you know, somebody that people know, and then she'll kind of break down their, how they did it and why they did it.
She does it so well because it means so much to her. So, you know, so we ended that, but that experience I would never, ever trade. Not just because it was very fulfilling and, you know, it definitely fed our egos a little bit in terms of like the numbers, but we did something that's really hard to do in the podcast space. But more importantly, we had developed a really awesome community and just that kind of interaction with your audience is, I would say, kind of rare when you have stuff every day where you got to be reaching out to people every day, replying to emails every day, DMs every day, looking at comments on YouTube. It was so fantastic. I learned so much from that experience. And it was right around that time we were ending that I was very focused on business because I had a couple very high profile clients that I started doing LinkedIn work for and then took over their podcast. And it was just kind of like, I would say, a very unique opportunity. And since that, then these individuals have grown substantially. They are extremely, extremely well known. I can't say who they are because I have an NDA with them, but I did not want to punt that opportunity. So that was pretty much the end of podcasting for me until I start again here soon. But yeah, I mean, it is just a matter of priorities, but I do miss it for sure.
You do have a question here. So I always try it in the lives to get to some of the questions. So she said, Ray Lynn, she says, Rich, do you believe you ever had been able to find a job with a corporation? So I think what she means, I'm going to try to paraphrase, but do you believe you've tried to find a job like within a larger corporation? Could you have been happy that way? I think, or you,
I don't think so because of my almost immediate understanding of the just bureaucratic nature of large corporations. Although I am an entrepreneur now, I would say if I could rewind, I think if I understood startups better, I would have seen, you know, just the grimy, dirty, hustling work that it entails, but also the opportunity for equity or something like that. But you're much closer to the ground level at a startup. And I have a feeling you would have intimate relationships with, you know, the founder or the number two or number three, and the learning in that atmosphere or that environment would have probably been substantially more than being just an executor or an order taker, so to speak, at a bigger corporation. And there's big corporations, and I can't, this is such a generalization, I'll admit it, but you probably are not going to find the leadership that you need that's especially aligned with like what you have in life, especially if you're a veteran, because you don't know what you want to do. You just don't know.
You've been, like, told all your life what you're going to be doing, and you don't know.
You just, that's a great point. You know, when you she says here, I see, what was your thought for a dream job? I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. So it's like, who's going to have the patience for that? No one wants to hear like, I'm going to try this out for a year or two. Nobody. So a large corporation, in my opinion, I mean, that would have been, to do it again, I would say, would have been pretty challenging. But I knew training day one at Amazon, I was like, F, I'm in the wrong place.
You're in the wrong place. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a crappy feeling to have too, when you are just starting and know this is not the right fit for you, but now you're stuck because you've gone down this road and you made it work for two full years before you said, okay, I'm done. I'm out. See you guys. Yeah. It is tough. It is really tough to figure out what it is you want to be when you grow up. I can tell you, even in my own experience, after 27 or 28
years, you're almost at three decades.
I mean, it's like, it's so foreign to me to think like, well, what do I do now? And that is part of the reason I started this, was because I wanted this creative endeavor and I wanted to be able to have something that was, that I created, that I could put my heart and soul into before I got out, and then hopefully continue to build it once I am out.
You have a blank slate. You will have a blank slate. It's like getting a custom home build. You don't need to move into someone else's, you know, floor plan. It's yours. And yeah. I'm so glad that you have time to contemplate it. But I think what you're doing right now, and this has been such, so much fun already for me, on this, being on the show, but it's, the sky will be the limit. And I hate to use cliches like that, but it's going to be an exciting time, I think, rather than stressful.
I think so too. And we've built our lives around the idea that if I don't do paid work after this, we will be just fine. And so then it becomes, well, what do we do to find meaning? Because we're not going to just sit around on our rocking chairs at me 47, 48, my husband 10 years younger, and just do nothing. I mean, we all want meaning and we want purpose. And so I think that's also what you transition to as you get older. Because the money starts meaning a lot less.
Yes.
The purpose starts raising up a lot more. And so then you say, okay, well, what am I going to do to make my mark or to have some sort of purpose or some meaning with the years we have left?
Yes. I mean, that's exactly right. You mentioned it at the very beginning, but you know, after I found my faith a couple of years ago, I cannot even tell you how much more meaning my family has to me, how much more meaning, you know, some of the mission work that we do, it impacts me. Like it is, I could tell you, I've landed some great clients, some great contracts, but there's just something about being in Nicaragua and being in a third world country and helping install water supply to a village that's never had it. And I don't say that. And I really hope that doesn't come across as like some weird, arrogant like thing, but it just felt exactly what I wanted it to be. And sharing that experience with those people and them sharing their experience with me was definitely bigger and better than any awesome contract I've landed. I could tell you.
I was so happy to see you doing it. When I saw that you would like transition to using your video skills for missionary work, I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. And I was really happy because wow, you took like your talent and your gift or your skill that you've worked so hard to do, and now you're using it in this whole new capacity. It's just so, it gives me chills. It's just so cool. It's what we should be doing. It is what I hope this podcast does for people. I really do. I know people say she speaks truth to power and she's just so annoying. And I am all those things, but there's a purpose behind it. And there's a reason, because I believe that these conversations matter. And I believe that when our flag officers, our general officers, or whoever else starts to have these kind of conversations on camera, in a long form content, a lot of these headline grabbing stories will just go away. I really believe that.
I agree with you.
Because I cannot
agree more.
I think that sometimes they're so afraid, and a lot of it is, and I've learned of this lately, a lot of this is generational. I do have to hope and believe that the people that are either me or younger that are coming up through the ranks, they're going to understand that when a crisis happens, they're a lot better off just getting on camera and explaining their side of things than letting Task and Purpose or military.com or all these others tell their story for them. I mean, what do you think about that?
I think so. I mean, it's almost irresponsible to not be able to create copy or make a video or post a picture with your thoughts on something, like at this point, only because of the way so many things could get misconstrued if you allow other people to speak it for you. Now, obviously on the government side, it's a little bit, I mean, you're a public affairs officer. You can't just have people saying whatever they want, but you also have a LinkedIn account that says, this is not DOD endorsed. This is me. I am a human outside of my service. So I think it matters. And if you do not at least explore the opportunity to have a voice in a public space or in public forums, then other people will decide it for you. And obviously the last thing you want to happen in a negative situation is that. So it's not irresponsible. Maybe that was like a strong word, but I would encourage people to, to leverage their ability to have transparency online. And I think it'll stand out. I mean, for the same reasons you and I agree on certain types of content, like you can see through it. Right. You can see through what's real and what's not. And people flock to authenticity and realness and transparency. So practice that skill.
I agree. And I think that the military is poised to do more of this. And I think that the environment has come to a place where it is expected and people are not happy if it's not being delivered. And I know when I read these stories that have no context, I'm frustrated because I know there's the story behind the story. And I know that, yes, as a public affairs officer, yes, those leaders do have to consult with God and country to get the most benign things put out in the media.
Yes.
But darn it, can't you just trust a three-star to have a two-hour conversation about something that they have been working on intimately and they understand and they know the ins and outs and the intricacies and why things weren't delivered on time or this didn't happen? And why not just tell people and then say, well, this is what we're going to do differently. This is what we're going to do better. This is how we're moving forward. I just feel like that's going to, I don't know. I could go on a tangent.
No, I mean, think about it. Like, just let's think about it for a second. So if I'm just going to use very well-known people, Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, like The Rock, I mean, whoever, like some of these globally known people, sometimes we are like glued to hear what they have to say to determine, you know, exactly some of the things that you're talking about. But in our space, or if you're in currently in the service, like that's even more important, you know, it's more important to just understand like who is at the helm. It's past the rank and it's to the person. I want to hear how they talk. I want to see their body language. I want to hear how they articulate. I want to hear their rationale. I don't want to hear like they were just following this or this is what the DOD requires. We want to know more. And the same reason you create content and I create content and I help people create content is so that that way there can actually be a true connection established. Whether they know it or not, like there is a connection that can happen. And there are people who are going to either, and you know the deal, like people are going to agree, disagree, doesn't matter. But as long as you showed up to put it on display, what you have to say, unfiltered, no veneer, no polish, the respect, I think, whether you agree or disagree, is still going to be high and tangible.
Totally, totally. And yeah, Ray Lynn is still on there talking about some of this stuff. And she just said, thank you for your service. I'm so glad you found your purpose and in giving help. Thank you, Teresa. You know, she explained that she's got some things going on. I won't read the whole comment, but it's been difficult for her to communicate today and just give you your appreciation. And thank you, Ray Lynn. We appreciate that.
Yeah, big time.
Definitely. And yes, I think that you're right. And one of the things that you point out is that Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, they do go on 2-hour podcasts and they do show you who they are. I mean, Elon Musk has a biography this thick that I'm still finding going through. And I love it. I mean, he's got a lot of problems, and a lot of issues and a lot of trauma. He is certainly no saint, but it is wonderful to understand what drove him to make some of the decisions that he did and how he ticks. And I think that we are poised to have a reckoning with our government, where government leaders will one day do this as well. Because I think that it's time. Business leaders do it. Government leaders can too.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Think about after a Lakers game, there's like 20 microphones in front of LeBron James's face, right? Like, what happens if you're that guy or gal? You know, like you better be ready. Like those people, I just think you just it's
yeah.
Well, we're gonna see it. Reckoning is a great way to put it.
A reckoning is coming, and we're gonna see it. And there's gonna be some 3-4-star admirals and general officers who are gonna start doing it, and then everyone's gonna be like, "Oh my God, why aren't I doing it? Why aren't I on this podcast?" Yes. I'm telling you, it's gonna happen. It's just gonna have to happen slowly. We already do see it with some of the retired flag officers, you know, the big names like General Flynn and some of those. Sure. But I do think that in time we're gonna see the others. What is your advice for somebody as we kind of near closing out the call, but mm-hmm. what is your advice for some of the people who are reluctant to use LinkedIn or use these channels to communicate? They've never done it. And how do they get started?
I think you have to, if you are contemplating content creation, or if you're contemplating using a platform like LinkedIn or Instagram or just podcasting, I truly believe there's two things you need to consider. One is obviously, why do you want to do it? Okay. Mm-hmm. Why do you want to do it? Do you want to have an impact? It's some, I call it podcast by proxy. We've had clients before who've worked with us, but it was because their CMO said they should have a podcast. They were never bought in. So it didn't really work out. So if you're not necessarily bought into why you should do any of these things, then you probably will not enjoy the process whatsoever. If you do have a why, and let's just say you just want to build a network and get to know civilians because you're transitioning out of the military and you're going to make a conscious effort not to connect with just veterans on LinkedIn. You're going to try and get to know other people, diversify your understanding of a corporate workforce or startups or whatever it is. That's a great reason. Okay, so your why is probably the number one thing. The second is, what can you gain from it? And I do not mean followers or anything like that, but what can I gain by posting 2 or 3 times a week? My copy might improve. If I'm doing video, maybe I'm going to become a better public speaker. If I'm a podcaster, maybe I'm going to be a better storyteller. If it's a solo podcast, if I'm someone like you, then maybe I'm going to have better interactions with people and my communication skills are going to inherently improve after having 134 freaking conversations. Whatever it is, those are the things that you have to contemplate. So why, and then like, what can you gain out of it? Not just, not the clout, not the money, not the anything. What can you gain from it? And that's how I would kind of gravitate towards the medium that suits you the best. You might have a great, great friend in Pensacola, Florida, who's probably a couple years from retirement. He is one of the most creatively handy people I know. And by handy, it's just a total understatement. Woodworking, electrical, all this stuff. And sometimes mm-hmm. he just takes videos of it. And I'm like, and I could tell he enjoys it. And he would not consider himself a creative, but I'm like, people would search for that tomorrow. You know, like how to install this security camera yourself, sure. you know, and it's just so interesting. So he might not think that, but I guarantee he's videotaping for a reason, and he might not know it, but it's so other people can use it, because why not? You know, right. or so he could remember how he did it. So I think, you know, under the surface, you start to realize this is going to be useful to people. This is going to be of service to people, whatever it may be. I think those are the things. And in terms of like how to approach it or anything like that, I hate to give such maybe benign advice, but the only thing, there's nothing you can say, Teresa, or I can say that's going to help anyone substantially versus them just doing it.
Doing it and screwing up and doing it again and again. Totally.
That's really the name of the game. There's no secret sauce. It's just do it until do it, evaluate it, see how you feel, check in with yourself, look at the performance and just be like, okay, this is working, this is not working. And let's just say, I will tell you this, and I know we're getting close, but I've done, I used to do this, you know, family day or Sundays for family posts or Sundays for family posts.
I remember. I love those posts.
Everyone does.
I do. So, I do like
you know, I cannot tell you how deflating that was, because of course I love my family and I'm glad everyone else did as well, but no one gave a shit about my content.
Business.
But content about content or business or podcasting. I mean, it's like a flat line sometimes. So I was like, man, I'm stuck. Like, what am I going to do? Make something about them every day? But so you might find that the byproduct of something that you didn't expect to take off. And that's when you're just going to be at a crossroads, be like, am I comfortable doing this all the time? And the answer might be yes or might be no, but only you are going to be able to make that decision. And do not be surprised. I will just say this and I will stop after this. Do not be surprised at some of the things that you try or put so little effort in as being some of the highest performing, you know, content.
I know. Like this thing, like look what I had, the 2 lips, and I decided I'd been doing all this kind of serious content that wasn't as big. Yeah. And so then I saw this little woman with puffy lips on Instagram and I'm like, oh, that looks ridiculous. Let me see if I can do it. So I tried really, but it was so bad. It made me laugh. Even when I took the picture, I was like, oh God, I'm not even close. Yeah. So I put them next to it. I was like, who wore it? Oh, that that clip, that's done really well.
Of course. It's ridiculous.
But that's also like life. I mean, I think people always like the lighthearted stuff. They like the stuff that, you know, sometimes we don't want to think deep and we don't want to be totally serious. But I did not get to your comment, David Jones, but he did say, you know, he said always having an amazing guest and conversation. So David Jones is also another one of my helpers that I work with. He's the founder of Hello LLC, and he helped me with my mobile briefcase that you can see on LinkedIn. It's really neat. It's like a link tree, but it's a little bit more jazzy. So
cool.
But is there anything that you would like to address? Oh, I do want to ask, like, what's up next? You said you have another podcast. So what's going on with you now?
I miss it, and I want to get back to having conversations with entrepreneurs, but I do want to be a little bit broader with it as well. I don't want to reveal the name in case it doesn't happen, because, you know, whatever. Yeah. But there's that. And then I do have a friend who is just really trying to have me have a podcast about podcasting, and I'm like, that's the last thing I want to do on earth. But he is suggesting it for a very legitimate reason. He's an extremely successful YouTuber. He's like, use it as your content creation machine, the same way you use other your clients' video podcasts to be content creation machines for them. But he's like, you're literally going to be kind of demonstrating, you know, how it works and what's going on, and you will be able to have your own case study. So you're taking your own medicine, very similar to someone like Alex Hormozi, who you know, did everything in it leading up to his book, $100 million leads. He literally executed everything in the book as a way to promote the book, and it worked. It was ridiculous. So, you know, there is something to that, but a podcast about podcasting, I don't know.
Well, and I mean, it might just be a very niche audience too. Yes. That's the thing you're going to have to know when you do those kinds of things. Like my friends in the animal world, and I know this when I did puppy mill protest, I used to be like, man, nobody even looks at this stuff. But really what it is it's just a very small, very niche group of people that really care about commercial breeding facilities and puppy mills and pet store things. I mean, your friends and stuff will support you, but you know, sometimes that's what you want to do. And like you said, if you want to create these case studies and really execute as you're doing it, it helps you learn. So there might be other things that you'll get from that experience.
And let me just say this about a niche audience is that there is nothing I would rather have 50 like true real fans than 1500 who half of them are out to lunch and don't care or watch the content or liked it once. Like there's nothing wrong with being surrounded by your people. You know, right. I mean, someone needs to hear what you have to say, and I would not worry about the number. I would worry about the quality. It's just like working out, right? Like I go to the gym every day, but if they're not quality workouts, nothing's going to happen. So it's like, just think about it. Think of the people that you want to be consuming your content. If you are a content creator, and if you get those archetypes or that avatar, whatever you want to call it, there's no better feeling. I'm just telling you right now, there's no better feeling.
I would agree. I can tell you from the comments that I've received or the letters or whatever things that's been sent to me, it's amazing. Sometimes you have no idea who's watching your content or people who've been impacted until they tell you later on, oh, I've been following your stuff for years or for months, and you have no idea.
Yes.
It happens
all the time.
So, but thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure. I'm so honored to talk to you. I'm going to go full screen just to close out, but I will meet you backstage to say goodbye, but thank you again. And, for people that want to go on to any of your website, I have your website right here, richcardonamedia.com. If you're, you want to say a little bit about what you offer?
Sure. I would say right now, what I'd like to gift is just like, we have a free resource library, and it's episode planning for podcasting. There's world-class hosting guides. There's gear guides. We just want to just give. We're like in a very much a season of giving right now. So if you went to the website, to the free resource library, you would be able to find a lot of different things there. And yes, of course, we have services, but I'm not interested in pitching our full podcast services right now as much as I am just trying to give people something that might aid them in their podcast journey. So that's what we're all about. And then obviously you could find me. Actually, this is huge, Teresa. If anyone here listening, watching is on Instagram, I am experimenting with a new page, and it's called Podcast. It's at Podcast Rich. So if you want podcast content or creative content, go there. I would love to kind of build that following, and I have an experiment to see what happens with that page.
Awesome. Oh my gosh. I am going to go check it out. Thank you very much. Like thank I said, you. I will meet you backstage. But thank you so much for this opportunity.
Wait, one second, Teresa.
One more. Tell me more.
I have to tell you something. This has been really freaking good. Thank you. You're really good at this.
Thank you. I love doing it. I'm very passionate about it.
I've enjoyed myself more on this than I have on a lot of things I've been on recently. And I think just as someone who evaluates podcasts and podcast hosts all the time, I think you're doing a phenomenal job. And I just want to let your audience know that if they don't see what good looks like, this is what it looks like. This is it. Oh my God.
Thank you. That makes me feel good. You know, these are like the conversations I have with my husband when we're walking Jada. I'm like, oh my God, this person just said this. And he's just like, whoa, that's really cool. And we're just kind of like, we just got to keep walking or running. So thank you so much. You're welcome. I will meet you backstage. I'm going to go full screen. And I'm supposed to have a show tomorrow, guys, with the president of the Military Basketball Association. I want to dive into sports. I've got two great girlfriends that are also my husband's good girlfriends right now. And they're both very athletic and they're in a volleyball club. And it's really gotten me thinking more about athletics and sports. So hopefully I will have him tomorrow. We just still need to do some wrapping up. But if not, I will see you again next week. And I hope you guys have an amazing evening. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and have a great night. Bye-bye now.